Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 23rd, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I feel like crap. But that will not prevent the great Cliff Schechter from coming and making my day. Then, from the road, traveling, I don't know where he is, Andy Kindler will join us. Meanwhile, the Trump-Clinton debate just 36 business hours away. It's happening Monday night. Also on the program, for-profit schools, at least a bunch of them, could be facing the death knell. And Chris Christie, his impeachment on the table, ladies and gentlemen, following revelations by prosecutors that he knew about Bridgegate. Hillary Clinton proposes raising the estate tax. Progressives line up on Clinton administration appointees. Gary Johnson has a very interesting theory on how we can deal with climate change. Chelsea Manning in solitary as punishment for a suicide attempt. And the cop who shot and killed Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa is arrested on manslaughter charges. The Keith Scott family in Charlotte, North Carolina, sees the video of his shooting, and the mayor calls for its release. All that and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if today ends up being short, I never know when we start the show how long it's going to be, but I definitely feel
we do long.
Yeah, I know, but I don't feel very well.
I don't feel good. An hour and a half later.
Well, that's why his budget numbers are all over the place.
Well, that's
oh my
the
God,
problem.
Are you a libertarian? Would you like to talk for 45 minutes? That's like vitamin C for me.
Honestly,
oh, it's
that
4 o'clock. I guess we should end. Okay.
That is the problem. By the time I get like 20 minutes into the show, it's all of a sudden I feel like, and then literally like 30 seconds after the show is over, I'm just like, oh God, I can't walk.
You just deflate. It's like all of the, you remember something that annoyed you or something that was amusing, and you're like, you know what, blah, 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 blah. And then you get that out of your system, and then you just sink in your chair.
That's right.
And totally deflate.
I think like literally at the end of one of the shows this week on YouTube, somebody was like, you look like you passed out at the end of it. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, but I felt like all of a sudden like the cold came on 3/4 of the way through the show. So it was probably like an hour 7 of the show.
You said that you felt like you had a cold maybe 15 seconds after we were done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunk down into your chair.
That's what happened. So we'll see. I'm already feeling better just talking about this. I should tell you also, got into a little Twitter tussle. You know, we had that debate with Jimmy Dore the other day.
And our I thought friend.
What's that?
Our friend.
Yes,
Jimmy
our
Dore.
Friend Jimmy Dore.
Yes.
And I thought it was over. I was perfectly satisfied with how it came out. But Jimmy seemed to want to relitigate it on Twitter. And so I said, well, I'm happy to do this. Why don't you have me on your show? And he said that he would invite me. I mean, ostensibly, I guess from his perspective, he was hoping that I would just say that I would explain Hillary Clinton's record to the people on his audience who know it. But I'm probably going to take a slightly different tact than that. But so I will keep you updated. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. I haven't gotten any details from him. So if people want to tweet him and ask him when this is going to happen, that would be great. Because then I could schedule it. Because I'm busy. I got a lot of curriculum meetings for my kids' schools. I went to one last night. It was exhausting. At one point, like I'm sitting there, like I can't, like where you're sitting in mini chairs, and the teacher could see, like, you know, I'm also probably like the oldest parent there. I was probably the oldest person in the room.
Hi, everyone. Did you see this horrible, terrible segment on the Young Turks? No understanding in the Supreme Court.
I think we would like to get back to just what we're doing in terms of a 3.5-year-old's ability to socialize.
Social security, solving, goddamn it.
Speaking of 3.5-year-olds, I dealt with a guy who'd... they were, at one point, the teacher actually like interrupted the presentation and said, like, do you need to stand up and walk around? Because I was like, my legs. that's that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Cliff Schechter. I'm very excited about this debate. We'll see.
It's going to happen. The presidential debate?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, and the one with Jimmy Dore. we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, and there's nothing that could make me feel physically better than actually listening to this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am. I'm feeling a little under the weather, but I'm feeling much better now that you're here.
Well, I'm glad to make you feel better. If that's my only role in life, it means I've accomplished something at least.
Well, that's fantastic. I wish there was more people around me, frankly, who felt that way. But
exactly. So... I've heard Jimmy Dore feels that way, though.
Oh my God. Well, no, we just we had a friendly you know, a debate, and I think it was you know,
I don't know, man. It started off friendly, certainly, and it ended kind of friendly. It got a little heated there somewhere.
It got a little heated, and then I think it, you know, then on Twitter again,
I'd say the third quarter it got kind of heated.
Well, that's you know, I mean, that's when everything heats up, that third quarter.
That's true.
The famous
that kind of
third quarter heat up, as they call it.
So look, here's the thing, if I'm allowed to speak about this,
of course.
So I don't know Jimmy, and seems like a nice enough guy. So I'm really not trying to be disrespectful to him personally. The attitude he shared and sort of the argument he made, I've got to be rather disrespectful of. A lot of people have been writing great pieces lately, Charles Blow. I mean, I'd mention Krugman, but a lot of people think Krugman is just in the tank for Hillary anyhow. But Charles Blow is a good one. And, you know, other folks who pointed out the sort of the folly of voting third party or not voting, because he said he's not voting. He never really said, Jimmy didn't say who he's voting for in the end. He just said he's not voting for Hillary. Or is he voting for Stein? I don't even know.
I mean, I imagine he would vote for Stein, but he, you know, he lives in California. But yeah, go ahead.
So it doesn't matter. Well, but you made these points when you were talking to him, which is, I don't care how you vote. You live in California, but he has a platform and people are listening to him who don't live in California. And that is the problem. And, you know, the thing is that it took a lot of things. So people are like, oh, it's all Nader's fault that Gore lost in 2000. Well, of course it's not. Right. I mean, there are numerous factors that went into that. Gore, you know, feeling like because of the Monica Lewinsky thing that he couldn't campaign with Clinton, even though it was stupid because they'd gained seats in 98 and Clinton was very popular at the time. The fact that Gore spent very little time to none in his home state and just kind of assumed, even though the state was changing underneath his feet, like many of the border states were, that are now very Republican. We've seen the end result of Tennessee, West Virginia, Kentucky, Arkansas, you know, where they've ended up. But if he'd spent enough time there, he only lost by 2 or 3 points. Maybe he wins there. You know, we can get into butterfly ballots and, you know, everything else. But the point is, if Nader doesn't do what he did, that, and the press, of course, covered it terribly. Does that remind you of any other campaign like this one? You know, Al Gore sighs and George W. Bush gets a foreign leader's name wrong, but you want to have a beer with Bush, so that's okay. The sigh, though, can't
right.
be forgiven. So, yeah, all that had to go wrong to get to the point where it was close enough. But all that could have gone wrong. And if Nader had said in the end, you know, you absolutely, this, we can't do this, that George W., these two guys are not the same, and there are going to be massive differences on every level of government, because I'm going to explain to you and educate you about what a president does well beyond going to foreign wars and signing legislation. Every position they fill in the Health and Human Services Department, every judge they put on a court, these things matter, all of them. And we found that out because you've seen what President Obama has been able to do unilaterally with something like Cuba, which already Trump has said he would undo. That's just one of a gazillion examples, right? So, you know, New Hampshire and Florida both ended up, the Nader vote was much more than a difference. And it's pretty clear that that never happens. Does 9/11 happen? Who knows? I know that Al Gore wouldn't have ignored 60-plus warnings. Could he have stopped it all? Maybe not. Maybe he couldn't have stopped any of it. But we'd have a hell of a better chance of that of having happened if he had been there. Would he have gone into Iraq, the guy who said he cared about global warming, before anybody else gave a crap? Would he have done something, and would we have taken that path during the Bush years, and where would we be now? I mean, there's a million things like that for you to know what a huge difference there is. So now we're sitting right here, and I don't think it could be any clearer than it
was. Not to mention the Supreme Court, right? Alito, John Roberts.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think it'd be any clearer this election, because it's almost like, if you believe in that kind of thing, God was saying to you, I'm going to make sure you know what your choices are. Justice Scalia is now dead. And maybe I shouldn't be making Justice Scalia's dead jokes, but I don't really care.
But that's not even a joke. I mean, we obviously we can't know if God actually intervened. because he's all powerful and he's a guy. But I'm saying,
come on,
right? No, but you're right. Times. You're right. But just in terms of like, you know, nothing could make it starker. And it was almost as if this the spaghetti monster, or whatever that guy is called, in the sky, also said like, you know, let's sprinkle in a couple of cases too. That so we can really draw this out so that if Sam or Cliff is making this argument, they could point to like Friedrichs, just for instance, or the case on Texas trying to create these fake regulations ostensibly for the safety of women so that they can restrict abortions. Or and I think there's probably two or three others that
there are voting rights.
Voting rights.
Well, here's the thing. If you want to be reminded also, because I feel like this is so huge and is not talked about enough. I feel like, especially this election in the past, when I'm talking about 60-plus warnings, I'm quoting from Kurt Eichenwald's book. Kurt Eichenwald just wrote a phenomenal article more recently on you know, basically Trump Inc. and all the various illegal and ridiculous things he's been doing. But he wrote another incredibly important piece from Politico, you know, 2-3 months ago. I think we've talked about it on your show before. But of the 13 appellate courts, when President Obama came in, we had a majority in terms of conservatives versus liberals, a clear majority to from the center to the left versus the center to the right on one of those 13. As President Obama leaves, even after all the obstruction, all the blocking, everything they've done, we now have a clear majority on 9 of the 13.
Yep.
And if you don't think so, it's not just the Supreme Court. All of these lower court cases, all these ones that allow the assault weapons bans to stand and stop the people from shutting down abortion clinics and making sure that bathroom law is such that they're not able to discriminate against people, or, you know, company law or whatever it might be. These were all a lot of these court cases recently were lower court cases. They weren't Supreme Court. And those courts matter. That's also your farm team, by the way, for the Supreme Court. You know, to think that Judge Rogers Brown, who I'm sure Trump will put on the Supreme Court, wouldn't make a difference. You could see that happening right now, right? African-American woman, they go even a step further than the Clarence Thomas thing, and they bring up somebody twice as crazy, but she's a woman, and you wouldn't be able to stop it.
And we should tell you, like Rogers Brown, like, for instance, thinks that Social Security was literally when this country went socialist, and thinks that it was thinks that Social Security is unconstitutional. And so and just get to hammer in that the circuit court court of appeals point, you know, the D.C. circuit court we've talked about, there wasn't even a full complement. And the reason why there is now is because of Harry Reid basically nuking's really not the right word, but whatever. The filibuster for just federal judicial appointments and executive appointments. And so undoubtedly in January, if whatever party is in control of the Senate, if they have a president who shares their party, we're going to see the removal of the filibuster, I think, for SCOTUS and legislation. I believe
that was my big problem with what Jimmy was doing was basically, you know, I'm sure he's a funny dude and whatever, but you know, I don't want to be a jerk, but he clearly either doesn't watch Washington that closely or just doesn't get it, because his sort of fantastic notion of what, well, the Democrats could do this. The Democrats could do all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, they could find a way to travel to space tomorrow and go set up a colony on the moon. I think somebody brought up the moon at some point in your conversation. But, you know, the thing is that they don't. And you brought up how the voters don't support that in the Democratic Party. That's true. But also, to our chagrin, quite often, we know that when it's something like the public option, for example, in that vote, you lose 7 or 8 Democrats or more, because there's always a certain contingent of Democrats that don't have the courage. I'm looking at you, Heidi Heitkamp, and Mark Warner, and Joe Manchin, and John Tester. I mean, give me a break. If you know anything, if you follow what goes on in Washington, you can want something, the Democrats, to filibuster till the end of time. Which I don't want, by the way, because I actually do believe in our government working. But even if I did want them to do that, they will not, because I've followed their behavior. I understand the way Washington works right now. One party works within accepted norms, and it took them until the Republicans essentially said, we're not allowing you to have any more judges to even get rid of the filibuster on lower courts not the Supreme Court and not legislation, even though 90% of the country, just to pick one issue, wants background checks. We got a 55 senators in support of it. That should have been enough, but they filibustered it. And did the Democrats say we're getting rid of the filibuster because 90% of the country wants something and the Republican Party won't let it happen? No, they did not. And they will not do it for anything else. So to think that this set of Democrats, whether you think it's a good idea or not, throw that aside, what your morality is and what you think they should do, they won't, because past behavior tells you these things. Past behavior tells you that the Republicans, long before Donald Trump came on the scene, have been breaking every norm of Washington that exists for about the last 20 years. Right? I mean, from holding open their Medicare vote, the Bush Medicare vote, for like 3-4 hours so they could find people hiding in their chambers and almost like literally, you know, drag them out to vote for it, to using the filibuster as a regular weapon, to the way they've gerrymandered, to everything. They've destroyed every norm you can possibly. So to think that they wouldn't go and then destroy this one, that Mitch McConnell, right now, they're refusing to put a Supreme Court justice on, and as Jimmy actually rightfully pointed out, the one that Orrin Hatch said would be his ideal candidate from the Democrats. If they will break all norms right now to refuse to put that guy on, you think they're not going to do the same thing? And next year, they'll break whatever norms they need to break. You've got a Texas governor right now who's refusing to listen to a judge.
Right.
That's some people's definition of a constitutional crisis.
In terms of the voting rights.
Yep. Decision. Right. As of right now, my guess is he's going to give in at some point and do it. But as of this moment, he's pulled an Andrew Jackson and basically just refused to listen to the courts, which are supposed to be the final arbiters of what happens in this country. We have basically a party right now that's almost like flypaper for maladjusted, misanthropic authoritarian personalities. Chris Christie, Rudy Giuliani, Paul LePage, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz. These are people that don't get along in normal society with normal people. All right. They only dominate. That's why they exist. And, so when knowing that, and Greg Abbott, of course, is one of those too, knowing that about them, to have some fancy notion of, the Democrats will still win the Senate and they'll block Trump, or the Republicans will stand up to Trump, I don't know where the hell Jimmy's getting that from, that they'll stand up to Trump and not do what Trump doesn't give a crap. He's all about the power. The minute he gets there, if Paul Ryan says Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these are things of the past, Trump will be like, sure, where do I sign?
Right.
I mean, we right. all know that.
I mean, the story
what
today.
His argument is.
Ted Cruz is on the brink of endorsing Trump. I mean,
that's right.
This is they will all fall in line. And the argument probably is like, he's going to give us whatever we want. Donald Trump is not on January 20th, 2017, going to go, I've really given it some thought, and I'm just going to go back to the positions that I've held dearly in my heart secretly for 30 years, which is
right.
An expansion of the social safety net. I think
that's true.
Right.
Everybody loves Eugene.
Yeah.
Hey, look.
Listen, I've had a Eugene Debs. I secretly have had a Eugene Debs portrait on my wall right behind the one I had of Mussolini. And so.
In the last century, guys, there's been one, unless I'm forgetting something, one president successfully assassinated. All right? And Donald Trump accused Ted Cruz's dad of being involved in that assassination.
Right.
And
Ted Cruz
is
about
to
endorse him.
He sent out pictures of his wife on Twitter and called her ugly, and he's about to endorse him. These guys, all that matters is power. They are a collection of authority. The reason why the minute Roger Ailes leaves Fox, he ends up with them. These guys are all the same. There's a reason why they're all friends with each other. They all treat women terribly. They either have been involved in domestic abuse or 3-4 divorces, or they strand people on bridges and laugh about it, or they make jokes about people putting lube and taking it up to whatever. When I'm talking about Paul LePage now, and really voicemails calling people other names I won't say on your show. Just because they criticized him, they're all the same. Right. They're all drawn from the same poisoned well. And if you're going to put this party in full control of Washington, we've seen what happens when this party is in full control in Kansas, for example. All right. So to think,
Wisconsin.
I mean, again, Yes, Wisconsin, which is was a in our history, has been a relatively progressive state.
Yep.
And look at what they've done there.
Yep.
I'm just saying, like, you know,
right to work legislation, national right to work legislation. I guess you roll back parts of the National Labor Relations Act. We could just go honestly.
We can go on and on. The point is that it is incredibly irresponsible of Jimmy to make that argument, and I'm not personalizing it to him because there's a few other people out there on the left making this argument too. Most have come around and are not, but every single one of them who makes this argument. You know what? Maybe they're doing well enough. Maybe Jimmy makes a lot of money as a comedian. I don't know what his background is. But he's not going to lose his abortion rights. And chances are he's not going to live in a neighborhood where now more guns will flood in and where cops will kill more people. And where, I mean, the implications for most people in this country of the Republicans entirely controlling the government is really too scary to think about. I'll probably be okay. You'll probably be okay, Sam. The people in your studio there will probably be okay. But you know what? Most people don't have the financial means.
Kelly,
right now.
Probably not so much.
Kelly, not as much. That is a good point. I'm sorry, Kelly. I should have realized
I'm not
that
sure if I want to get an abortion, but maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
we'll keep everybody updated.
Whether you want to or not, it's a healthcare procedure, like any healthcare procedure I would have, and it should 100% be your right to make that decision.
And Michael's a bit of a cuck, so they may be doing like cuck purges.
If there's a cuck purge, we know who the first one is.
Let's not argue.
Look,
let's not argue
Mike
about the cuck purge.
His,
with those
Michael
glasses, Sam. I mean, be real.
I don't want to make this about
all Republicans in power. They may make a rule that only white Republicans can have their Viagra paid for. And then what's Michael going to do?
Boom. Wow.
Are you really? Wow. You are so desperate to insult me that you let Cliff get away with that?
What do you mean? Let him get away with that?
You give him pride. That was so weak. Cliff, you could do better.
I had to insult you somehow.
Cliff,
Michael,
you could do
I mean,
a lot
you know,
better.
Right. I insulted Kelly inadvertently, and now I felt bad. I'm trying to even out the score.
All right.
Well, that was much more
problem. But here's, I mean,
all right,
back to
country.
Yes,
from
mean,
your guys'
the,
failed comedy.
I'm kidding, Michael. Go ahead, sorry.
The thing that upsets me about it is I think, was the whole fantasy that somehow this is a net positive. I mean, you know, I've had people who've told me, like, look, I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. I'm in a blue state. I think there's an argument as to whether or not the Green Party is a worthwhile project. I think there's an argument to that. I think there's an argument to, like, if I'm in a blue state, I really want to create a third party. And if they get over 5%, they will get federal matching funds and they'll run those into local elections. And they'll build.
I don't agree with you unless there's fusion. I would debate you on that. If there's a fusion ticket, like,
I'm just saying
you can do it like in New York or
I'm just saying that's
otherwise
debatable.
Just take away from the Democrats.
Right. Okay. I'm just saying that's debatable. I just think that, like, that is at least there is a theory that is thought out behind it. We can argue as to whether or not there's evidence that that's going to happen or this and that. But the idea that Donald Trump is going to sort of all of a sudden on day one have all this massive resistance to him, and even though he just won an election, and that the Supreme Court being 5-4. A conservative to liberal as much as I have some issues with that, but just in terms of like some of these major issues, the idea that it doesn't matter about just on and on about all of the courts down the road that we can weather the storm, whatever that means, is so fundamentally wrong. Just as a statement of fact and just analysis that
just appointees. Do you remember during when we went through and for just one or two examples in the Bush administration, and we found out how they were purging attorneys.
Yep.
And they were literally putting attorneys in, and then this was happening in Health and Human Services too, people in from Liberty University. These are people that actually make decisions on a daily basis, right? If you don't know Liberty University, folks. Think Jerry Falwell. And so they were taking people from religious universities, and they were making decisions about law and healthcare based on that. Because what people forget, Michael Tomasky, I don't know if you've ever had him on your show or not, Sam, wrote a great piece, I don't remember when, about when he was younger and he grew up in West Virginia, and talking about somebody needing to call and get something done. And it was during the Clinton years, Bill Clinton years. And there was somebody who was a medium level person in the Health and Human Services Department And it was some, you know, I'm trying to remember all the deals. But long and short of it is they were able to get somebody on the phone who gave a crap and helped them. And what you don't, what people don't get is how many of those types of offices a president fills.
Right.
You know, and it's the courts, it's those offices. It's so much beyond, you know, beyond what you think it just is. And so to screw around with all of that in sort of a,
but even to tell people that it's not important. That's the part that really drives me crazy. It's like, if you want, like, I don't know how people are going to vote in the booth. They go into a voting booth, they vote, whatever. But to go out and espouse the notion that the only part of government that is relevant is the what the name of the president is, not what they do, not who they appoint, not what the other parties are in the other. The idea that none of it's relevant, that is so appalling to me. That's what really got me going. I mean, now it's happening again. So I'm trying to, you know,
The people have this fantasy when they're protected from the downside. It seems to be a very white male privileged fantasy. There's a guy who's like a radio personality in I think he's in Canada or somewhere, who used to follow me on Twitter and I don't believe does anymore. Because when I started pushing for Hillary Clinton, he lost his mind on me. And his whole thing was right now, you know, that we should just vote for Trump and tear the Band-Aid off. And my response to people always is, you know, are you a child? I mean, honestly. Tear the band. I mean, do you understand? Like, I'm sure people initially thought Robespierre was awesome too, was radical, and we need to go in a more radical direction. You know, once you start that kind of destruction of democratic norms, you don't know where it ends up, and often it ends up in every bit as bad a place.
But
as
we
it would
do know.
Up.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like evidence has provided us. I mean, the past 15 years provided us a perfect example of what happens in that situation, right? I mean, it's not like you have to go back to like, well, back in the late 1700s. There's a prime example of what happened in a small Massachusetts town. As they, you know, no, you just go and you look at what happened with 8 years of Bush.
Robespierre,
5,000 Americans who wouldn't have been dead in Iraq, for example.
I mean, not to mention,
you know, let's not belittle the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in Iraq and beyond, and the creation of ISIS in the vacuum and everything else, and Katrina, and we could go on and on forever. It's just, it is such a childlike notion. Again, you're angry at Hillary Clinton. If you can make the argument that you truthfully are beyond holding her accountable for the kinds of things that all the rest of these people did, and it's not sexist, it's specific to her, even though you could find a lot of people who messed around with emails and all sorts of stuff, fine. But if you really want to make it, if you can want to try to convince me, okay, well, it's not sexism at all. It's all about that she's just such a horrible person. And I can't, well, you know what? She still is in your party. You still can pressure her because she needs your vote. And the other guy has made quite clear what he's going to do. It's a binary choice. It's an easy choice. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, on your own time, sit there and have these fantasies about rising up and overthrowing the power structure and blah, blah, blah. Because in the end, it may affect all of us because I don't think I'm exaggerating. Nobody knew Hitler was Hitler. Nobody knew Mussolini was Mussolini. Nobody knows any of these guys. Somoza. I mean, we can go into a lot smaller names who killed.
Somoza, great guy.
Idi Amin. I mean, you know, nobody knows these people or these people.
Donald Trump doesn't have to be these people. Donald Trump could be, frankly, you know, Marco Rubio, for all I care. The fact of the matter is that with the Republican Party, the way that it is configured today, the idea that you would give Paul Ryan basically full control of our government, or Mitch McConnell, or any of these people who, I mean, because we know the House is going to be driven by the Freedom Caucus agenda. I mean, the idea that you would basically hand over the keys, lock, stock, and barrel to the country, to the Republican Party. I mean, to a certain extent, like this is, and maybe we can pivot to the debate here in terms of Clinton.
Let's pivot, because
like,
I know you spend a lot of time on this with him, and I can talk about this forever.
But I think, look, this is why I keep, you know, banging my head against the wall, hoping that she reminds people that, look, Donald Trump may be extraordinary and sui generis in terms of being just a horrible liar and just beyond reproach in so many different areas. But at the end of the day, the worst part about it is that this guy, because of those characteristics, He's just going to sign off on the worst legislation that is going to be driven by the people who vote for him and empowered him. And so you're going to get stuff like you're going to get. I mean, go look into people should just go look up like the ALEC preferred legislation. Pick out the worst aspects of everything that's happened in Wisconsin and add, add a magnitude of, I don't know. And that's what we're going to get. They're just going to go full hog. And I don't know that there'll be a filibuster at that point, and they're just, it's going to be, a wreck. I mean, I think during the debate, this is a time for Clinton to just simply say, to remind the country that not only is she coming out with these proposals, I don't know if she's going to do it or not. The chances are no, just based on the fact that she's not going to have the House. She might or may not have the Senate. But at the very least, there's an argument of like, what should the vision of the country be? And it's not just the vision of the country is not just going to be giving license to racists and white nationalism. It's also going to be cutting Social Security, cutting the Medicaid for millions of people, cutting Medicare, maybe getting rid of Medicare.
But you can't also undervalue what you just said, the cultural change, because look at when this guy has been able to control as much media as possible, even his dumbass Uday Hussein's son, who's been tweeting out this stuff with Skittles, and just think of Rwanda and the Hutu, the couple of guys who are trying to stoke all the violence and referring to people as cockroaches. When you turn people into non-people, whether it be some kind of bug, or be Jews being referred to as rats by Hitler, or Skittles, when you dehumanize people like that, when you put those guys in power and you give them the microphone that comes with the presidency and let them dehumanize certain groups of people every single day for 4 years, I mean, what you could see culturally in this country, I can't predict where it could end up, but in terrible, terrible places. And that's what we're talking about here. It's the policy is a huge part of it. But culturally, I mean, already this guy has reopened old wounds and brought out the worst in just about everybody he possibly can. Now, let that family control the White House and let them have Congress at their side, too, and let Rudy Giuliani or Chris Christie, if he's not in prison, be the attorney general. You know, and some of these other guys who you're talking about putting on the Supreme Court, that was the other list that came out. He just added some more to his Supreme Court list, and in another ass-kissing gesture, put Mike Lee on there, because I think in addition to Ted Cruz, he figures it's a twofer there. He can get Mike Lee's endorsement. Some more Mormons come along, and don't fool yourself. Mormons are still outside of Utah, are a significant enough population in Nevada and Arizona and Colorado to make a difference in this thing. And so
Lee, I noticed, rejected him immediately.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, he did. So, I mean, he's trying to, he clearly is trying to win over, bring those guys in. I mean, the destruction that can be wrought by this guy culturally, I don't think that can be measured. I really don't. And so, let's talk debates, because I don't want to overdo this. It's the kind of thing that I could talk about forever, because I heard the anger in your voice. And I think Jimmy is a friend of yours. I could be wrong, but I thought he was. But I would have been the same way, if not worse. Like, I was trying to contain my bubbling anger just listening to the exchange, because it was so sort of nonchalant and so kind of, oh, no, no problem. The Democrats will just filibuster and everything will work out fine and unicorns will crap puppies and everyone will be happy. You know, I mean, this is our country. This is our democracy. It's far from perfect. We need lots of things to move in the right direction, but nobody moves in the right direction if Trump comes in. And a few of us who are lucky enough to be white, male, and maybe and not poor, maybe end up okay if the guy doesn't start a damn war. Everybody else suffers pretty bad.
All right. Well, I agree, obviously. All right, let's pivot to the debate. I want to start with this, because this is something we were going to talk about, and I have a feeling we may be seeing the dropping of Clinton's plan to expand the estate tax may be a little bit of an indication of what we're going to see during
65% for billionaires. Did I see that right?
Yeah. It basically,
that is incredible. I mean,
it ups the estate tax. It ups the estate tax to 65% if you're over a certain amount. I'm not exactly sure what the number is, but it's basically a billionaire.
I read that it was billionaire. I just saw the top line of it, but people need to understand, just to stop for a second, how, again, many who don't give Hillary Clinton any credit for being progressive, even though she was one of the more progressive, most progressive senators in there, especially, you know, that is incredible, because we had moved to a place for years where no amount of tax could ever go above 50%. You know, the talking point, people had the right to you know, they had the right to at least take home more than half of what they made on blah, blah, blah. Even estates, and estates got to the point where we're talking death tax and you shouldn't have anything taken. It's a huge step.
Yep.
It really, culturally, the policy will bring in some money and will be very good. Culturally, that is an enormous step.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of aspects about this. Like you say, it's going to bring in some money, not huge amounts of money, because we're dealing with such a small, tiny, tiny, infinitesimally, like literally you could fit all these people into, you know, a small bar mitzvah, if you will, or, you know, a nice, you know, sort of understated wedding. All the people who could pay this thing would show up at that wedding, essentially. And the amount of money, I mean, it could fund a couple of her programs. I mean, we're talking, you know, several hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps. But the point is that what it also does is it begins to decrease, you know, income inequality. But let's listen to Neil Cavuto talking about this, and then let's talk about
embolism. Assuming.
Let's listen to Neil Cavuto talk about the estate tax here, because I wonder if this isn't a little bit of not what Neil Cavuto is doing, but you know, I think it's quite a coincidence that Clinton drops this literally 2 days before the debate. Let's listen to Cavuto.
This gives new meaning to the term tax to death. Word Hillary Clinton is proposing an even steeper hike in the estate tax than she has already. Forget 45%. She wants to take it all the way up to 65%. True, that 65% rate will ensnare only those worth more than $500 million. I'm sure startling news to her billionaire backers nonetheless. But she's already reduced the amount of what she calls rich estates. It's $5.45 million now. She wants to take that so-called threshold down to $3.5 million. Now I know what you're thinking. Relax, this is just rich folks. Wrong. This is just the start. If history is any guide, what constitutes wealthy keeps going down, and the tax on that wealth, well, that keeps going up. Right now, the estate tax is 40% on estates worth more than $5.45 million. Then, inspired by Bernie Sanders, Ms. Clinton proposed hiking it to 45% again on estates worth $3.5 million, then 50% on estates worth more than $10 million, and 55% to those worth more than $50 million. So you see where this is going. Now, again, I know what you're thinking. Even that lowest threshold of $3.5 million seems like a lot of money. But remember, this thing is not indexed to inflation. It won't seem like so much money many years from now. So a lot can change, including what is considered a lot. Remember when a $100,000 house seemed like a lot? Or a couple in that house making $100,000 seemed like a lot? Or a dollar a gallon gas seemed like a lot? It didn't take a lot of years for a lot to change, except government's insatiable appetite for more.
All right, so here's my point.
He's hilarious on so many levels.
Well, but here's my point. Here,
someday the Jetsons will fly. In their cars, they will fly. At that time, $3.5 million will not seem like a lot.
But Neil Cavuto's cold aside, and maybe that was impacting
like
his ability
to throw up. Was that the cold, or that him getting?
But here's why I think we may this is why she has dropped this week. I think she's hoping this comes up in the debate, or we'll bring it up in the debate. And you could tell by that clip with Cavuto, there is no way to sell this to the American public where they don't go, "What the are you talking
right.
about?" Like
she
he's sitting there going,
Larry
"Like
Kudlow's,
he, you got Neil Cavuto,
Aaron Burnett's to all lose their minds, and that puts her in the perfect place."
I mean, you cannot talk about this without seeming. Now, granted, it's Neil Cavuto on Fox Business News. There's only a half a dozen people there, and they all probably are, you know, like $3.5 million. That isn't a lot, But for
well, I'm sure there.
99%.
I don't want to take too long, but just this is one of the funnier stories, right? So give just 30 seconds if you'll indulge me.
Go.
I think it was 2004. I could be off, but I think it was. I went on Fox one time because I used to do that kind of silliness, and I went on Cavuto's show. And I'll never forget this, sitting there, and I was making an argument. I think at the time Kerry was saying he was going to raise taxes on people making over $150,000 a year. It was something like that. And Cavuto sat there arguing. It just lets you know how far removed from reality they are. Cavuto sat there and, you know, just looked me in the eye, and he was sort of like, $150,000, that's not very much money. And that's where they're coming from. And Cavuto has no idea that to most people, making $150,000 in a year is like an incredibly good year.
I think the strategy here is, I mean, I don't know, but I just find it very curious that this proposal comes out now, and it is aimed specifically at Donald Trump and probably literally maybe another two dozen families tops in the country, that if this comes up, how does Donald Trump respond to this? Like, $3.5 million, isn't that very much? Or, you know, $500 million, does it go as far as you think it does? Like, you have no idea how much I have to spend on just gassing up my plane.
You know how much I'm going to need to steal from a leukemia charity to cover the cost of that?
Listen, most people don't have their own private charitable foundation that can pay some of these piddling bills. So... It's not fair to the rest of the country.
Like, Buffett's going to support it, and so in a number of the. So it's not even.
But my
like,
point is, if this comes up in the debate, if this comes up in the debate, there is no way to argue against this without like Neil Cavuto just showed us. You got to throw on like it used to be $3.5 million. Now it's all the way. So you talk about $5 million,
you know,
and they talk about 40% of $5 million, $3.5 million, and you know there was a time where it's like $2.8 million, and like all they're doing is throwing around numbers that nobody, like 99% of the country, will never see. I mean,
can't even
it's
fathom
no,
thing.
No, I mean, and so I think she is going to try and pivot to this at one point. And just sort of basically dangle it out there and see what Donald Trump, like, I wouldn't be surprised if she says something to the effect of, as you know, I introduced an estate tax the other day.
Now, you know, there's a part B to this too, Sam, which I am personally loving. You may have seen this. She's given a front row seat to Mark Cuban.
Yes.
At the debate. To rent space inside of Donald Trump's head.
Yes.
Because Cuban is everything that Trump actually fakely claims that he is. Cuban made money, billions off of ideas he actually generated, and gives lots of money to charity and does all these kinds of things. Whatever you think of Mark Cuban, he does all these kinds of things that Trump claims that he does. So my guess is
to be fair, he has three co-hosts on his reality show, whereas Trump had none. I mean, Trump was just like the guy.
So he gets an easier ride. But the seriously, I mean, he'll be there, and my guess is he'll come out in favor of it ahead of time. I think he's estimated worth about $3 billion or something at this point. And so a guy that actually made all this money doing things and didn't have to, as he's ripped into Trump for the fact that Trump, you know, you don't have to run these little scams if you're really that wealthy. You don't run Trump University. You don't do stuff like that. And just everything about Cuban gets under Trump's skin, and I'm sure Cuban will come out for this too.
It'll be interesting because
he sits there and looks him in the front row.
This is an attack directly on his strength, at least what has been his strength, at least in the context of the Republican Party. That is, he's a billionaire, and in the Republican Party, if you have the more money you have, the more morally righteous, the more powerful you are. And the corollary, which is, of course, if you're poor, then there's something morally wrong with you and you have a cultural problem. And it is going to make him own what is big bragging rights, right? I've had a wonderful business. I made a ton of money. And I would not be surprised if she doesn't say, like, you know, if she doesn't bring this up and really go directly at Donald with this, with Donald Trump with this and say, like, you know, comment on it. Like, this is the thing that I think she needs to do throughout the entire debate is talk about policy. Make him respond to the idea of parental leave. Make him respond to the idea of expansion of Social Security. Make him so that either he takes a position that hurts him or the people in the Republican Party do. And there's just he can't do it. There's no positions that he holds to the extent that he holds any positions that are going to resonate with the American public, to the extent that he is, you know, in this, still in this race, it is a function of the disposition that is attractive to Republican voters, and a function of
missteps by Hillary Clinton,
and perception of her character. And I think she just should make it like, look, I think the subtext of this would be like, it doesn't matter who I am, this is what I'm going to do. And make him address those actions and those issues.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I like that this is a new policy. I'm hoping, as I always hope, that she, you know, that this, I'm sure they polled this. I'm sure, as you would expect, it's got like 75% to 80% support, maybe more, as does increasing Social Security, as does paid family and medical leave, as does equal pay for women. Like, these are this is all the stuff she should be emphasizing. Yes, also talk about social issues. Also emphasize your position, your inclusive position on immigration and your position on women's autonomy and your position on gun safety. But these economic, core economic issues, if she defines herself with those, that she wants to bring everyone to have these kinds of opportunities, she'll blow them away. Yep. Now, granted, we're dealing with a media that's going to lower, you know, we have to do our best to not allow them in whatever small way we can to lower expectations to the point of, so that if he doesn't throw up on himself, he wins. But, you know, I think he's taken enough of the media for enough of a ride at this point that the coverage has gotten better, let's just say, the last 2 weeks. It's far from perfect, but New York Times has started calling him a liar on their front page. CNN has actually started to criticize him and in chyrons point out that he's lying. You know, will it continue? We have to try to make sure it continues and that they actually cover this thing like it's a presidential election and not a baseball game or a popularity contest. So,
Cliffy, we will talk more about this after the debate. We shall see.
After the debate. And I'm going to be in Vegas this time, pal. So
for the third debate. For the third debate.
We'll do some fun stuff eventually from there.
But, yeah, but we got a couple of weeks for that.
Well, this debate first. Are we talking the Friday, or am I coming on debate night?
Let's talk about that. I'll call
Just
you.
Let me know
we'll
whatever you want.
Okay.
I don't care.
All right, we'll figure it out. I'm not sure exactly what we're doing yet, but all right, we'll figure it out. I appreciate the. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. Take care. Bye, guys.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back. If I don't pass out during the break, we'll be talking to the wonderful Andy Kindler.
I'm thinking that I'm Bernie or bust, actually.
This is Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Oh, we got Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Is this a new song? Or
no,
is this...
it's a repeat.
In honor of what?
Of Chris Christie.
Oh, Chris Christie. How wonderful is it going to be, like, if Chris Christie's impeachment or indictment drops, like, the day after the election? It depends who wins.
All Trump right. will be like, I didn't even know him. He's a loser. Who's that guy?
I knew him briefly in high school.
One time he gave me a burger and I said, thanks. But besides that, I mean, I don't know.
I disavow.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Here is Jimmy Reefer. What's the name of the song?
Big Fat Governor Liar.
All right, well, we'll be right back after this.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Or is he stuck in traffic? I'm holding the cone. Revenge is what I desire. I'm a big fat governor liar. Is your Democrat mayor doing good for you? He can't do the things to you that I do. Hurricane relief that you desire. I'm a big fat governor liar. Yeah, I gotta lose some weight. Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and old, did liposuction and sucked out my soul. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet, the smell of meatballs and lasagna farts wafted in my head. I should resign, I should retire. Big fat governor liar. Yeah, I'm a Big fat governor liar.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jimmy Reefercake's Big Fat Governor Liar. I forgot about that. That was a great one done in a Bruce Springsteen knockoff about Chris Christie. You know what one of my favorite Jimmy Reefercake songs is this one.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
I'm quite convinced that I could do an entire podcast once a week of just playing that song and listening to Andy laughing behind it.
It gets me every time. With a Jew like Andy Kindler, there's no better lyric written in the history of music. What do you do about a Jew named Andy Kindler?
And I also like just keep thinking like every time, and I think I always forget to ask, like, where, like, did your grandparents write the God Bless America song? I mean, or is he just talking broadly speaking, like the Jews did?
Irving Berlin. My grandfather was Irving Berlin. he always regretted having the German last name.
Oh, Andy! Now, I don't know.
That was a weak. That was a weak opening joke for me. He always regretted having the German last name. He was named Irving Munich.
Oh, boy.
They write themselves.
What's going on at that hotel you're staying at? It's like The Shining. They wouldn't answer the phone.
Well, you know, first of all, when I answered the phone when they called from the front desk thinking it was you, so I answered with my usual wacky, hello, and we still had one more step. They said, you have an outside call. So they're not kidding around here.
No.
I'm staying at the, I shouldn't stay where I'm staying.
Yeah,
staying,
no, right? Don't. We don't want to create an international scene there.
Actually, I'm staying at the Jefferson Hotel.
No, don't do this!
As Trump calls it, the Jeffersons. I'm thinking about using that joke, but by that reaction, I'm not going to.
But
I'm doing a fundraiser for Hillary tonight.
Hey, like Hillbot, the original Hillbot. So you're doing a a fundraiser. What kind? Tell us the details.
Al Franken is hosting.
Oh, I've heard about this one.
And Schumer, it's Amy Schumer, Jeffrey Ross, and me. I can't even believe it.
Wow, is it? Why is it exclusively? It's an exclusively Jewish comedian fundraiser.
It's only for George Soros generated. I'm getting a lot of George Soros trolls. There's a lot of anti-Semitism, anti-Hillary thing. I'm just giving you the news. I got a what's the menorah? I know I get that they hate the Jews, but what's with the menorah memes?
What are there menorah memes that you're getting?
Yeah. I get this one guy who I finally did block because I was enjoying him for a while, but he.
You block a lot of people on Twitter, don't you?
I just would like to take a minute. I'm sorry, Andy.
What?
What was that?
For the menorah memes.
Oh, yeah. Michael
Sidzik. You don't know what a menorah?
No, he spends like literally 90% of the time in the office on Photoshop creating menorah memes.
Sent to you.
In other words, what he's saying is. It's like a picture of like the Hillary, and maybe she's kissing Soros, and then there's a global fascist, Judeo fascist, global, and then there's a picture of a menorah, just I guess just to make it pretty.
Now, just the lighting. That's what provides the lighting.
It's our work.
Hey, Sam, my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about Gary Johnson. My favorite thing is the way he sounded like he was. Speaking to his nephew at Thanksgiving, what is Aleppo? it's something that happened at school,
right?
what is Aleppo?
Circle time.
And what is Aleppo?
Well, you know what? Now that you mentioned Gary Johnson, we should. I don't know if you've seen this clip. But this is a clip of Gary Johnson, and look, I happen to think that I would love to see the debates. Back in the realm of run by the League of Women Voters, and have them decide who gets in as a third or fourth candidate, whatever they would do. I think it should be independently run. But so here is a clip of Gary Johnson sitting at a bench. I don't know if this MSNBC reporter, it's Casey somebody, I don't know if she found him on the bench or just actually set it up so they could sit down and talk to each other. But here he is talking about the debate, making the argument that all he needs to do is show up and people would look at the other two candidates and vote for him. But he decides to express himself as to like how he wouldn't have to talk in a very strange way. I don't know if you've seen this, but here is listen to this, Andy.
Do you think if you were able to get on the debate stage that you could pull even with Trump and Clinton in these polls?
I do. And it wouldn't have anything to do with my debate performance either. It would just be that people would recognize that there's another choice and that there would be an examination of me and Bill Weld as who we are and what we've done, and not based on that. I think I could stand up there for the whole debate and not say anything and emerge as a leader.
It is.
That's
him,
not very presidential.
Him sticking his tongue out and going, the look on the reporter's face.
She is freaked out.
She is totally freaked out. I wonder if like he was like, I don't know if he was trying to be like super flirtatious with her or I don't know what was going on there.
Hey, check this out, man.
I think I know what's going on there because
And I don't know if you know that most third-party candidates have been androids. So I think he's saying that he'll be the first human third-party candidate. So people should be... No. I don't know. That wasn't a joke. That was more like what you would say on the way to executing a joke.
But Andy, that is not the most ridiculous Gary Johnson clip we have today. You brought it up. Okay. Now, to be fair, this clip is from I think 2012 or 2011. And Gary Johnson is speaking at some forum, I guess, anticipating running for president in 2012. He ran in 2012. People may not remember this. And
Sam, let me just interject. This isn't, you're not setting up one of those horrible Bill Maher desk pieces where he says, "We found our own footage."
No. This is actually Gary Johnson footage. Matt, do we have this?
I want to hear more Bill Maher.
This is at the National Press Club. He is asked a question about global warming. And this is the thing that I think a lot of people, and we've had libertarians on here. I don't think anybody listening to this program is going to be terribly surprised by this answer. And Gary Johnson has gone to great lengths to avoid addressing any issues. So I actually think the idea of him going on a debate stage and putting his tongue in between his mouth and responding to every question that way would probably actually be an effective strategy for him, because people would just be like, he seemed a little bit awkward, but there was nothing he said that I could understand that would make me not vote for him. And this is why I think he would do that. Here he is at the National Press Club being asked about global warming. This is 2011.
View the issue of climate change, and what should the government's role be in mitigating that?
Well, climate change. I think the world is getting warmer. I think that it's man-caused. That said, should we be engaged in cap-and-trade taxation? No, I don't think that we should. We should lend certainty to the energy field. We should be building new coal-fired plants. When you look at the amount of money that we're looking to spend on global warming in the trillions and look at the result, I just argue that the result is completely inconsequential to the money that we would end up spending, and that we could direct those monies in other ways that would be much more beneficial to mankind. I mean, the long-term view... Should we take the long-term view when it comes to global warming? I think that we should. And the long-term view is that in billions of years, the sun is going to actually grow and encompass the Earth, right? So global warming is in our future.
There you have it, Andy. We're all going to die anyways.
Wait, I thought the sun, I got close, but I'm no astronomer. But I thought the sun was going to burn out. That's how we were going to, isn't that what's going to happen?
Look.
No, the sun will expand. When it burns out, it goes through stages where it expands and it might envelop the Earth.
Got it.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, Aleppo. Aleppo. Oh, I see. Aleppo.
I love the way he does the spelling bee thing.
Got it.
He does the spelling bee thing where he says the topic before he answers. Climate change. Oh, climate change. C-L-I-M-A-T-E, change.
And the thing is, he had this was a set piece, too, because you could tell, because he said, in the long run, and then he realized, like, oh, wait, no, I've got to set it up like this. Like, why not we take the long run view, which is we're all going to die anyways, so let's have more coal fire power plants.
But you never thought of it this way.
To be fair, it was 5 years ago that he said this. Although, right. I mean, also to be fair, we're 5 years closer to the sun exploding. So.
But I actually met a gentleman with a dashiki in the airport who told me that the sun is actually going to sustain us for all of history and that the scientists have it wrong. So actually, maybe we should do something.
Dashiki? I wish I had a reference as recent as dashiki.
Dashiki? I don't even know her.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay, everybody. I'm going to just take over here. We'll
see
you on Monday.
I think I have a fever. I think the sun is getting too hot. Oh, my God. We've got to build another coal-fired power plant so we can cool off from the sun.
It's sort of.
I don't even understand the coal-fired thing part. Is he saying double down?
Double down because we're all going to die. Is that what he's saying? Yeah, we're double down because we're all going to die. That's what it is.
Well, it definitely is cheaper. It's cheaper to build the coal. I don't know what he's saying, but did that thing with where he's sticking his tongue out?
Yeah.
Was that after the? Is that what he thought he would do to recover from the Aleppo? Or did that predate the Aleppo incident?
That's what you can imagine his advisor saying. Like, look,
they all think this about is Aleppo the, now.
This is the Aleppo. This is the Aleppo network. So whatever you do, don't say anything that they could understand as being stupid. And he said, oh, how about I talk like this?
My tongue hurts. I can't talk. I can't be interviewed anymore. My tongue is swollen.
What if I freak them out so much
I'm
that
sorry,
they never interview
like
me
Trump
again?
Mocking someone.
What if I just come up on stage, stare blankly into space, say we're all going to die, and then stick my tongue out? You know what I think will happen? I think they'll look at the three of us and say, obviously, I'm the best choice.
So, Andy, let's get back to this fundraiser. What do you do at this fundraiser? Do you have like a special Washington insider set that you do for this fundraiser?
I do a lot of jokes about bundling. At some point, I'm going to say, just between us Jews at one point. I thought there would be some kind of huge back-end cash payoff for me, but I'm not getting – there's no money in it for me.
Are you serious? You're not getting paid at all?
There's no slush.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I would not. I probably wouldn't take money. I probably wouldn't. I'm the most Jewish man in the world. I probably wouldn't take money. But you know what? If they offered me a stipend, that wouldn't be bad.
It would be rude to say no, like an insult to Hillary Clinton.
They flew me in.
They did. All right. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, what are you going to do? You going to pay your own wife?
Look, money's out. Money is out there. Well, I mean, money's out there. There's money. Someone has to have the money. Why shouldn't I get some money?
Do you do some of your better?
No, it's all free. It's tonight.
Is it sold out at this point? Must be.
I'm wondering.
Amy Schumer now.
Material. Should I do this? Should I do this joke? Ask me if I should I do the joke. Al Franken says, but should I do this joke about how? I'm worried to do this joke that Trump is going to build Trump's concentration camps. I will get the Jews to pay for the camps. The Jews will pay. I'm nervous about it. I'm nervous about my concentration camp.
How do
material.
We get the camps
well, wait a second.
For
Are you
going to
do your
money?
Classic regulatory state material? You got that great chunk on like the SEC and...
Well, I am going to do my gold standard material going back. I don't know what to do. I'm very nervous about it. Very nervous.
They're just people. They're just people, Andy. Very just nervous. Like you. Just like you. Except for they control the world.
But you guys have come around to me now. You guys, a few months ago, were, oh, Jill Stein this and Jill Stein that.
What
are you talking about? Thing.
And now it's
that is
my,
ridiculous. There was never a Jill Stein moment.
I remember you called me at home. Sam called me at home.
I was phone banking
he
for Jill
me
Stein.
At home and he said, Andy, you must consider Jill Stein. She's a great communicator.
You
she
should.
She seems like a dynamite lady.
You should just get up there and go like, I'm happy to do this, but I should tell you all, I'm voting for Jill Stein.
Great opener.
I'm telling you right now, guys, now you're on my territory from fear. A few months ago, you were like, oh, maybe you shouldn't vote for, maybe you shouldn't vote at all. That's what you guys were saying.
I was always on your side.
What are you doing?
For different reasons.
You're throwing us out the way. He's joking. We were all.
I love you're taking this opportunity
to agree with the thing that never happened.
Oh, no. There was no Jill Stein thing happening, but no, You have been a Hillary supporter.
Oh, you were pro Hillary, is what you're saying.
It's not that I was pro Hillary. I was going to say that from the beginning, I think for different reasons. I'm not entirely clear on Andy's reasoning for liking Hillary from the start.
Israel.
I'll tell you what it was.
Yeah? Okay.
I only liked Hillary as opposed to Bernie, because my objection was, and I still have the objection to, that your argument is because you're in politics and because you take money, that means you are, by definition, corrupt. I always thought that was a bad argument. I don't think Barack Obama is corrupt. And it always bothered me that he was making that argument. And also, I just felt Bernie had too much charisma.
You're also a self-hating Jew.
That's a separate issue. Yeah.
Separate but related. Andy, can you print out one of those menorah tweets and get it blown up behind you for the fundraiser tonight? As your backdrop?
One of those menorah memes.
Yeah, menorah meme. It could just be the backdrop for everybody's set.
Why are those people so bad, though, at Photoshop, the really anti-Semites? Is it because they hate Jews so much? They don't put enough time into the
they don't
Photoshop
bother to
part.
Learn.
No, but that's why I was for Hillary. That's why I was for Hillary. But I would have gone for someone else if there was someone else who could have reasonably won. I believe in the – I don't know what I'm going to say. I was about to say something about the two-party system. But
I always thought she was going to win the primary. And so I was like, why don't I just spare myself the – and I agree with you. I didn't think that she was – particularly corrupt for a politician or anything like that, and I like ladies.
Bernie would be doing better though.
Totally identity politics.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh, of course.
Now, Andy, let me ask you this: how do you like? Who asked you to be on this? I mean, without you know, I'm not. You know, it's like it's Amy Schumer. It is Al Franken.
Right.
Who was the other Jew? Jeff Ross. Was it Al? Was it Amy Schumer? Was it Jeff Ross?
Well, here's the thing. There was a Al Franken had a thing. Sarah Silverman had an event. I can say this, right? I'm looking at my wife. Like I gotta check everything. Sarah Silverman had like a fundraiser, and I met Al Franken. And years ago, I had done Tough Crowd. I don't like to brag about my credits, but I did do Tough Crowd. I bombed horribly.
I did that as well.
Tough Crowd. Did you do well on it? Because
of course. I kicked. I scared Colin so much he never had me back on.
I actually launched, and I don't always do this, but I launched into material, and it was so clear that I was launching into material that it was almost like time stopped, and it seemed like it went for an hour.
Well, but, the problem was because they were talking about one thing, and you just did a set piece on airplanes.
Yes. Yeah, baby.
Don't you think feminism is crazy, they said? And you said, what about the food and coach?
What's up with Tupperware? I mean, what's it made out of? Tupper?
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I met Al Franken there, but then there's another gentleman named Steve Kessler, and he's like a director. So I think there's so much buzz going on for me, Al. So much buzz. How could they not? How could they not eventually use me?
Please say hello to Franken for me.
I love him.
Obviously, I worked with him at Air America, and it was one of like the best things about having been there. And there was the one I still remember the night of that we had our big publicity launch for Air America, and Al introduced all of the hosts, and it was a big, you know, that this was, there was press there, and it was a big night, and Al introduced me, and I went up and pretended I had laryngitis on the night before the launch, and I was just like, I'm sure it's all gonna work out for us. I got my voice never again.
And you have a liberal voice.
Yes, and Franken complimented me after it, and I was just like, "Oh my God, this is great!" Like I was in heaven. Just to have Al Franken in any way validate my comedy
Well, he's so hilarious, and I met him. Well, I first met him
really,
on the ill-fated Chevy Chase roast that I got cut out of. That's when I first met him.
Ooh, geez, really?
Yeah, I got cut out. Fitzsimmons got cut out. Lisa Lampanelli got left in.
Of course.
I followed Lisa Lampanelli.
I can't believe.
Did I tell you this?
No.
Did I tell you the story? 7 hours. I've said this before, but it was the only gig that was in danger of I've ever been on that was in danger of going into a second day. And it was at the Friars Club. 7 hours in, I had to follow Lisa Lampanelli doing Christopher Reeve jokes. He was still alive. Christopher Reeve paralysis jokes. And then I had to try and put down show. But Al Franken was so hilarious.
And she had stepped on all your material because you had all this other quadriplegic material that just at that point was just an old hat.
You know what's tickling me, but when I'm not complaining about airplane food, Christopher Reeve can't walk no more. I guess not so super. Am I right? Am I right? Anyone?
You know what's tickling? I wish I had you know what's tickling me as a premise joke. You know what tickles my fancy humor-wise?
By the way, what a group of schmucks and idiots on the dais. F all of you. Anyways, Christopher Reeve, Fly, he can't even stand up anymore.
Is friar an old Yiddish word meaning, why did I book this gig? Hello? Jack Carter, get your head out of the soup.
So are you... Are you going around doing any sightseeing in D.C. or what?
What am I, 12? Who am I, a rube? What am I, what did I just get off the high school bus from Trenton? And I'm going to, no, we're not going to do anything because I'm nervous. I don't, it's
so what are you
going to
do, sit in the hotel all day?
Bombing.
It's just like, yeah, no, sit in the hotel room all day, just like fret with your wife.
What is it? What is it? What do you Rickle sit in a hotel room with my hand up in the air and the flare going off, going hello, and the front desk goes, there's a fire drill.
Hello, room service. Could you send me some more borscht? I have no idea.
Borscht.
I don't know.
Oh my God! No. So I'm in the but afterwards, my wife and I. What's that?
Well, I don't know. What your wife and I? What are you going to do? You're going
to later. We're going to have a lovely meal after
okay.
the event. That's what, what we're planning.
You're not going to go. Why don't you say to Alec, give me a tour of the Senate chambers?
I would love to.
Have you ever
like
been on
that.
The Senate floor?
No, the wife and I, we did the White House tour.
Oh, the wife and I. The wife and I?
The wife and I. That's her name.
Are you staying in a hotel that transported you back to the 50s?
The wife says to me, the missus, the missus says, hey, can we go into the Senate? Hey, Al, can you bring the missus and me into the Senate chambers?
I'll tell you something. It really is.
I don't know
what
I turned into.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I've been down there once and walked on the Senate floor. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
D.C. is really nice to just walk around. You should just walk around.
Ooh, I don't like D.C. at all like that. But
I mean, I lived there. And
you did?
Yes, I well, sort of. I went to the University of Maryland. I spent a lot of time in D.C., and then recently I spent some time there for some, it's a long story, but.
Regulatory problems?
No. but yeah, it's, well, I guess coming from New York, anywhere that isn't just filled with garbage and horrible smells. But no, I think it's nice to walk around.
Kelly, yeah, Kelly lives in 1972 New York, incidentally.
Backdrop of Serpico. It's her, like, specific
no, I
block.
Mean, you live in Park Slope, okay? I live in Bushwick. It's not...
It's different.
The same.
It's different.
So, anyway, that's my recommendation instead of sitting in a hotel room and thinking about how nervous you are.
Yeah, why take a walk around the take a walk around the Lincoln Memorial and
it's
contemplate
nice
how important what you're doing tonight is.
Work
yeah,
on your work
else.
On your Christopher Reeve material.
Well, I'm just excited about my new Serpico reference replacing my older stuff. Hey, Serpico, eyes this way, Serpico. Hey, Serpico, what's wrong? You don't like my
How many email jokes are you going to do tonight?
No, I'm not going to do. See, here's the thing. They don't have to worry about that with me. I would never do an anti-Hillary joke. I'm a company man,
And but I was, I'm worried about.
You gonna do any? You gonna do any Trump? You gonna do any Trump material?
Yeah, I told. I already. That's nice. After I told you one of my Trump jokes. You say to me, any that, Trump material?
You don't remember the Trump joke?
No, I don't remember.
Man, you're out of it. No, he said that Trump is going to get the Jews to pay for his concentration
camps.
Yeah. It's called other people's money.
That's right. I'm going to say, I am going to open with, do you think in Germany that they ever said things like, when's Hitler going to pivot? And then I'm going to do my comparing... Hitler, you know, I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler because at least Hitler was a veteran.
I wouldn't, all I don't know, it sounds more like pro-Hitler material to me than anti-Trump.
There's a couple of things you have to say about Adolf. Knew how to plan, was self-made, right. And had good message discipline. Does he remind you of anybody? That's right, Hillary. She's great.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't do it that close.
I bet he didn't want people snooping around his emails either.
We're literally, the majority report Twitter handle is literally blasting out Kindler previews pro-Hitler material for tonight's fundraiser.
Hey, do you think Hitler ever referred to his did Hitler ever refer to his enemies as haters?
Yeah, really haters.
I wrote that joke. I thought it would work just like that. You know, Hitler used to refer to his enemies as haters. And that was it, I thought. That's all I need. Mm.
I'd like to wish a Merry Christmas to the haters and the losers and even the Jews that are still around.
Is Goebbels... Hey, this is my Hitler roast. Is Goebbels laughing?
So, now, what do you guys do? Are you hanging out with Jeff Ross? Are you guys, are you planning anything for the Smithsonian tomorrow, or what's going on?
You mean to visit my act? No, we're flying back tomorrow.
They put your act under, like, a big plastic box, and it's... When it first
showed
up...
Don't laugh at it. Don't laugh. Don't touch. Just look at my act. Don't laugh at it. Just look at it behind ropes. That's all I ever wanted was to have my act be in a case somewhere.
Well,
hello? Did I lose you? Where did I get you?
I got Jeff Ross on the other end. Jeff Ross is calling on the other line right now. He's got a couple.
No, we're going back to L.A. tomorrow, but I'm so excited about this and nervous. I don't know why I'm so – I get nervous for everything. Does it ever go away? Do you still get the butterflies?
Well, I don't
Sam.
Really do anything anymore. So I just do the show. I just do the show. So I don't really, occasionally I'll do like a fundraiser for, you know, like my kid's school or something. That's it.
Right. But I'm nervous. I don't know why I'm nervous. But I'll be okay. It'll be okay.
I mean, it's just a different type of crowd. You don't get nervous when you go and do a stand up set at like, you know, Chuckle Huts, do you?
No, there's never and mo not Chuckle Hut. Am I still at the Chuckle Hut? I'm at the Comedy Trough in Amarillo, Texas, where the motto is you got to go back for one more helping at the Comedy Trough. I'm hoping to be a spokesman for Golden Corral one day. Nobody knows those commercials. I'm fascinated by Jeff Foxworthy as a spokesman for...
I don't even
see
that.
You like to hear him say sriracha.
I don't know what that is. But, all right. Well, what was I just going to ask you? I've got a little bit of a cold. Well, Andy, let's end it there, for God's sakes. I got one more thing that I wanted to talk to you about. And this is really important. I want to get, you're obviously a professional comedian, one who is doing major fundraisers, national fundraisers in Washington, D.C., surrounded by some of the funniest comedians in the country.
Surrounded by, how is
that? Surrounded by, I mean.
Adjacent to.
Within close proximity.
Right.
I want to get your take on whether or not this is funny, okay? Because I think. There's nothing worse than a guy who thinks he's funny and is not funny. Am I right?
I hear you.
All right. So listen to this. It's from CNN. This guy was on Piers Morgan It's the Dalai Lama doing his Trump impression. You tell me if this is funny.
Let me ask you then about the American elections, which are coming in a month. Donald Trump is a very controversial character. Have you met Donald Trump?
Never.
What do you think of him?
I don't know. Sometimes you see his sort of the way his hair, something like that, and his mouth, small. That's my impression.
That's a good impression.
But I don't know.
Is there anything worse than a guy laughing at his own joke? I mean,
the guy. I will tell you, though, that this is a true story that made me love. That was the Dalai Lama, right?
Yeah. Wait, honestly. Not that funny, right?
No, he's a little weak. But you know what? Here's the thing. This is an actual true story. Years ago, this made me love the Dalai Lama even more. Years ago, Stuttering, remember Stuttering John?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he went, you know how they used to send him, and I'm not calling him Stuttering John, that's what his name is, that's what they called him. So he went down to one of those news conferences, and you know how Richard Gere is a Buddhist, and he's like a very serious? So it's Richard Gere and the Dalai Lama, and Stuttering John says to the Dalai Lama, does anyone ever say to you, hello, Dolly, right? So the Dalai Lama starts laughing, and Richard Gere was enraged, and to me that showed you what true enlightenment was. Yeah. Richard Gere wants to be a Buddhist, and the Dalai Lama is a Buddhist.
That's funny. He also, though, would get cut from the Chase roast, right? The Chevy Chase roast?
He said, I don't know.
Didn't he freak out, though, when he was like, there's no fucking way I'm following Lisa Lampanelli. And that's why you ended up.
Oh, no, no.
I'm not going behind Lisa Lampanelli. Fuck that. No.
Just put up Kindler.
Oh, you should see his rider. What he demands, the Dalai Lama. He demands six pairs of sandals.
Andy, good luck tonight.
I'm glad I closed with six pairs of sandals. That's all I'm going to tell you right now. That is a solid closer.
Good luck tonight. I want to hear how the pro Hitler material goes over tonight.
I love you.
All right, talk to you later. Thanks, buddy.
All right, be good. Bye bye.
Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Kindler.
I really do like that, though. I hope he goes with that. And another thing, if we're being honest, that Hitler was very good about was consistent public messaging.
Well,
you never know what this guy's going to say.
It doesn't have to be all doom and gloom about Trump. If you can come up with a couple of positive things to say about Hitler, you don't want to freak people out.
I've been in a couple design classes where Nazi branding.
I'm dead serious. Okay.
And has been, we've.
Well, naturally,
It was very effective.
Very effective.
They're like red and black and white are the most effective colors, and they go through all of the stuff, and they're like, we're not endorsing Nazis. Or
I thought you were going to say I've been in a couple of Photoshop classes where. There was a lot of neo-Nazis,
like design, not Photoshop, that actual.
And they were very nice people. They would always help out if you needed.
Bankrolled by the Oculus Facebook guy. We should talk about that next week at least. Did you hear about that, Sam?
The Oculus Facebook guy,
Lucky Palmer or Palmer Lucky, I think is his name.
It's Palmer Lucky. Yeah,
he's a Facebook, close to billionaire, and he has been. It came out, I think, in the Atlantic. I should know this better, but that he's been basically funding a Trump meme, industrial Trump meme generating machine.
And oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
No, they're anti-Hillary memes.
Oh, they're anti.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're
anti-Hillary
and
memes.
Anti-Semitic and stuff.
Oh, good for him. That's great, Facebook. Well, but they also exaggerate how many hits they get, so it doesn't matter.
Big day.
Yeah, big day. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program, 6462. What's the matter? What?
Nothing.
What, we're going to do another freebie?
No.
No.
Wait, what was that?
I just got upset.
What were you upset about?
Every time you call the half, I'm like, oh my gosh, really? And it's already.
All she's saying is that she's really into the show and she loves listening to you talk.
It's been 3 hour shows all week.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to keep going.
I love the show.
He's
going
to be over there sniffling.
Oh, I'm like literally like,
I love the show, but sometimes I just throw my pen in the air when
you say
that.
You know what's going to happen? It's going to be like, we really need to wrap this up. All right, one more call. Hey, Sam. I feel like you've not mentioned that Jill Stein is the only not war criminal president. And then I'll take us for another 45 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com.
Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. You buy your crap through our links at majorityreportkickback.com, Amazon, and jet.com. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We get a different color button if we get to 100,000.
Also, when you subscribe, watch the videos.
Oh, yeah, that
as well.
Too. Well, yeah, both. But we don't get the different color button people watch. All right, we'll be right back after this.